Fakes and Senator Adams, in addition to myself, Senator Porcho. And the first bill that we're going to take up today is SB 254, dealing with group health insurance. We had the bill up before, and Senator Duncan, as the bill sponsor, and others have done some work on it. We have a CS before us today that we're going to take testimony on, and we have a number of people, or several people, desiring to testify on the bill. Is there someone from Senator Duncan's office here, or Senator Duncan? Why don't we start with Mr. Malik? Who do we have on teleconference?
No one.
Jeff is in, he's in Juno, he just doesn't have to be in the room right there.
Relating to the Telecommunications Information Council. And bill sponsor is Senator Fahrenkamp, and she is next door and on her way. Senator, we're ready for your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Somehow I just misplaced my glasses, so bear with me, please. Now, first, this bill expands the membership of the Telecommunications Information Council. Holy cats. I'm glad I came in here. For those on the teleconference network, I just found my glasses. Thank you.
Is there anybody on the line?
To begin with, my name is Betty Fahrenkamp.
I apologize.
Not introducing myself.
I don't think there's anybody on teleconference.
Fine. The bill expands the membership of the Telecommunications Information Council to include a voting public member and two non-voting members to represent the legislature. As a result of the 1989 audit, the recommendations were made that the Department of Administration, Division of Information Services, should establish an internal service fund to account for interagency receipts for telephone, data processing, and other services that are provided to other governmental entities. As of today, those have just been transferred to the budget. This bill formalizes the stated intention of the Division of Information Services to create such an internal service fund, or ISF. Interagency receipts will go into a fund called Information Services Fund, as could any appropriations to the fund. The department will separately account for all monies transferred to the fund by a state agency or a political subdivision. It will also separately account for any earnings of the fund and annually report on the operation of the fund to the governor and to the legislature. Interagency receipts in the fund can be used to pay the cost of providing services and can also be used to pay the cost of providing staff to the Telecommunications Information Council or to procure additions, replacements, or improvements to capital equipment. It should be noted that capital procurements must appear in the department budget submitted to the legislature. The bill provides that the department must include in its annual budget an estimate of its expected receipts for providing information services. The bill establishes that fees and surcharges for the information services are subject to annual review and approval by the Telecommunications Information Council, or TIC. I'd like to offer an amendment to the proposed CS. And what I did in that was to transfer the Telecommunications Council to the Department of Information, but it should be left in the office of the governor. They convinced me that the TIC staff should not be a part of the agency most affected by the decision of the council, but should rather be impartial and free from the biases that could necessarily color the opinions and the work. I have a proposed amendment for that on page 1, line 20. I think you have copies in line 25 to 27, delete section 2, renumber section accordingly, and page 3, line 17, delete section 3 and insert section 2, and page 3, line 21, delete section 5 and insert section 4. Do you have to answer any questions?
Thank you, Senator. One of the questions that I had, it comes up all the time when we're appointing legislative people to these commissions. When we're appointing legislators from each house on page 1, when we don't give them the right to vote, does that pass the new test for putting legislators on executive committee commissions?
That's the way we understand it.
So if you put them on, then you're putting on without a vote, so try to overcome that. Senator Tate?
Yes, thank you. I would like to know Senator Faircamp's rationale for putting the commission, the council, in the Department of Administration the first time around.
Hey, I screwed up. No rationale, no. They screwed up.
Senator Adams?
With this piece of legislation, I have problems with the, in the proposed, yes, with Section 3, Mr. Chairman, and Section 3A starts page 1, line 28, to page 2, line 17. It's proposed to set up an information fund consisting of money appropriated to it and money transferred to it by political subdivisions and state agencies. And 3B provides that this little fund will act as a mini treasury department. Excess funds do not lapse, interest earned are dedicated. That doesn't even happen with also with the rail belt energy funds. This subsection ends in saying the legislature may balance in these separate accounts to make appropriations for the information service fund. And I don't think this makes sense to anybody. And Section 3C says that money in council may be used for the cost of the council, improvement, replacement, capital items, provisions of services requested by agency. In this particular place, we are giving them the power to appropriate, and that's our job here. And why shouldn't the funds lap as other appropriations for a specific year? And this is the area that I have a problem with.
Senator Adams, I read this that we're not bypassing the appropriation process, that you still have to have all the money annually appropriated to the fund. It's only after it's appropriated to the fund that you would get into these other uses. Senator Faircamp, did you have
that's the way I read it, and then only the balances are put in the budget again. Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'm chairing a committee next door. I'm sure Joni can answer questions if you. Please excuse me.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Other questions of the
sponsor? I think I'm right. In this particular area, Mr. Chairman, and also the dedication of funds. Again, here we are giving the powers over to agencies, and that's not right, sir.
Mr. Chairman, he's right about the Railroad Energy Fund doesn't get its interest, but neither does the Working Capital Fund of the Department of Transportation, which I would think that this would be most akin to, and yet they can't do all of these things.
Well, I sure don't see this. We've set up these kinds of separate accounting funds in many different areas. It doesn't seem that different. In fact, if we wanted to, of course, we could appropriate the interest of the Railroad Energy Fund back to the account. We just have not chosen for various reasons to do that. But this would be the same thing. I mean, you can or you cannot appropriate money to the fund. That would be our annual determination. We have funds that we choose not to annually appropriate the funds even when they're separately accounted.
Mr. Chairman, there's also a memo in your packet from Terry Lauterbach of Legal Services who addressed exactly that question about the dedication of funds and how this would work.
Yeah, that's a memo dated March 3rd. Other questions of the bill sponsor or Ms. Hope? We have a representative from the Department of Administration, I think. Is there someone from the department to comment on 485? Yes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Paul Manette. I'm the Director of Information Services. We probably are the division who's going to be most affected by this bill. We received it on Saturday afternoon. We spent quite a bit of time with it. From the department perspective, we certainly agree with the intent of the bill. And we would like a little more time to review it and see what exactly the language is going to do for us. I guess we have some of the same concerns that we've heard expressed here. We're not sure exactly what it means. And we'd like a little time to do that. If we have any further problems, we feel quite comfortable working with Joan and getting those resolved.
Questions to the department? Senator,
well, yes, sir, through the chair to the department. Where did this come from? Did you request this kind of financial support?
there have been a number of initiatives, I think, over a period of time. The primary emphasis came from the telecommunications audit, which was done by a legislative audit, suggesting that the department have an internal service fund so that we could separately account for all of the different functions that we're performing.
Senator Adams.
Yeah, that audit was done last March 6th, but I don't think this is a workable solution to cure that particular audit.
Other questions?
Well, through the chair to the department, what suggestions did you have to cure your audit? There were several recommendations in that audit. What is the department proposed?
The department agreed with the findings of the audit,
right.
And we said that we would definitely do everything that we could to comply, and it's our intention to do exactly that. We've made a great deal of progress in identifying the various costs associated with the different functions that we have, and we've been able to certainly isolate and put our costs in centers. We've now identified 27 areas where we provide services, and we're working very hard to take a complete inventory, assign original costs to those, and set our maintenance up in such a way that the one can identify exactly which system is being maintained.
Other questions?
Well, would it help or hinder the department to have a council?
To have the telecommunications information council?
Overseeing these funds.
We think that it would probably be to the benefit of the entire state to have a central coordinating group such as the Telecommunications Information Council, which could approve plans for statewide communications and for the computing resources that we have in the state now.
Did you say statewide telecommunications?
Yes, sir.
But wasn't there an article in the Times on February 26th that stated that the state was looking at, once they put in telecommunications, is looking for a buyer for telecommunications statewide?
And that refers to one of the many areas that we are presently involved in, and I think what you're referring to is the RATNET. We have always been very mindful of the cost of providing services, and one of the major expenses in our budget is the cost to provide RATNET to the bush. We are very sympathetic, and we are anxious to see that service continue in exactly the form that it is now. We are looking for methods to reduce those costs, and one of those is to put out a request for information so that industry may provide us with some alternatives, but I can assure you that no matter what alternative is considered, there will be no reduction in service as we know it now. We're just looking at perhaps to have some competition come in and give us an opportunity to lower our costs through the use of technology.
Ms. Monette, thank you very much. Is there anybody else that cares to testify on 485? I think what I'd recommend to the committee is perhaps that we can hold this bill in committee for several more days and giving the department a chance to look at it and hopefully work with the bill sponsor and our staff and maybe addressing some of your concerns, if any, and we would appreciate if the department could look closely at the legislation and make any suggestions that you might have and modifications that you suggest. Perhaps we can get some additional information, and we'll also take up this amendment that Senator Perry Camp has put forward and perhaps pull out some additional information relating to dedication of funds and interest and see if this is parallel to some of similar kinds of funds that we have. Okay, why don't we go back then to 254, dealing with group health. We do have okay, we're back on teleconference. Senator Duncan, do you want to go through some of the changes since we've last had this bill up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will do that. I believe you have a lot of microphones here. Which one's working? Thank you. I believe you have in your packet a proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 254, which addresses the issue the way that I laid it out last time that we were interested in doing it. Of course, what this is an attempt to, on a long-term basis, get a hand on the rising cost of health care across the state. This is one of the long-term solutions that I believe will work and the Healthcare Cost Containment Task Force has been looking at. If you look at the first page of the committee substitute, Senate Bill 254, the purpose section, I think those first two phrases lay out pretty clearly what we intend to do with the group health insurance or with the health insurance authority. First, by February 1st, 1992, create a statewide health care providers payment system, rate schedules, and utilization standards. And second, after February 1st, 1992, provide comprehensive group health insurance for state, municipalities, school districts, and all eligible employees if they elect to participate. So it's a voluntary participation, not mandatory. Third phase, as I talked about last time, might be mandatory, but that would take separate legislative action, separate legislation. It's not provided for in this piece of legislation. So as I said, part one or phase one is to establish the state group health insurance authority. The authority is charged with responsibility to, by February 1st, 1992, so we're giving a little bit of time to work on this, to create and maintain a rate schedule to be used in Alaska, which will reflect the vast geographic differences and availability of services in rural and urban areas. I believe the authority has to recognize the fact that in some areas of the state, as far as providers go, there is competition, competition exists, while in other areas it may not. B, to create and maintain statewide utilization standards to control inappropriate or improper utilization practices to reduce the rate of inflation and the cost of health care in Alaska. And C, to create and maintain an efficient provider payment system to reduce the cost to providers who are serving employees and participants of the authority. The state, municipalities, school districts will benefit by using the provider payment system, rate schedule, and utilization standards, which will be established by the authority created in 254. That's phase one of the proposed legislation. Phase two, as it says in the purpose section, begins after February 1st, 1992, and requires the authority to provide comprehensive group health insurance for the state, municipality, or school district and all eligible employees of those entities who elect to participate in the group insurance offered by the authority. So the authority would offer the insurance, would not mandate participation by any entity. It would be available for voluntary participation. Expand the pool of subscribers and maximize the opportunities for cost containment when purchasing group health insurance, and coordinate the potential savings of having approximately 137,000 active retired state, municipal, school district employees and their dependents participate in the group health insurance program offered by the authority. So there's two separate and distinct phases that we're setting up for the legislation. Also, the authority is a 17-member board, which is a pretty good-sized board, but it seemed to grow as we started looking at it. 17-member board of directors appointed by the governor, with the general powers provided to quasi-government agencies, including the hiring of staff and the ability to enter into contracts for professional services. In addition, the authority may exercise the powers granted to other insurers that are licensed to the state, and that's laid out in the powers granted to the authority. After February 1st, 1992, which is the second phase, after February 1st, 1992, the authority shall make bid specifications available and collect premiums sufficient to purchase group health insurance to cover the eligible employees of an employer who has elected to participate. It may also grant a waiver of participation to a state, municipality, or school district when they can document their ability to maintain or to match minimum benefit financial standards established by the board. And participants may separately provide for health insurance in addition to that provided by the authority. We also have a provision that the authority is required to make a progress report for the legislature by March 1st, 1991. And that report would cover the authority's efforts in establishing the health care provider payment system, rate schedule, and utilization standards. Mr. Chairman, as I said, I think this is an important component of trying to get a grip on the rising cost of health care in the state. We've been looking at the employee side, the cost containment, work with insurance companies. It seems that the one part of the equation that needs to be worked with that we haven't is with the providers, and that's all providers. It's not just focusing on the hospitals or who we normally might think of, but all providers throughout the state in order to establish these payment system, the rate schedules, and utilization standards. And I think if we can do that, we can have a major impact on healthcare costs. As I indicated last time when I testified, the total cost of healthcare in the state is approaching $400 million. It's about $370 million. It's the cost, not just for state employees, let me clarify that, but for municipalities, school districts, et cetera. And it seems if we can achieve a savings of that in that large dollar amount of any magnitude, it's worth pursuing. That, Mr. Chairman, is the explanation of the bill.
Senator Duncan, just a small point that I agree with you. The 17-member board seems very large. And when you go through though, the membership, it's a little hard to see who you would cut out of that. My one small question was whether or not that if we don't know whether municipalities or school districts are going to be opting in, would they have representation conceivably without being a participant?
Well, in phase one of the authority, the Phase 1 of the authority we create, they are mandated in, not for the purpose of procurement insurance, but for the purpose of using the payment schedules, utilization rates, et cetera, that are put together. So in Phase 1, the language is clear on page 2 of the committee substitute. The authority shall, by February 1st, 1992, establish and maintain a health care provider payment system, rate schedule, and utilization standards. The state and municipality or district shall use a health care system. So that's why they're represented. That's not for procurement, but for the payment systems. And it is a very large board. I want to raise your attention. I'm not sure if you've got a copy of this memo. I just saw it, but I think it's worthy of looking at from Mr. Ford, who indicates that there may be a constitutional problem with having legislative and judicial members on the board, that it may violate the separation of power. So that may be a way that you can reduce the board. One, somewhat, they could be there as ex-official members, perhaps, observing, but I think that that is a legitimate point that we didn't look at when we put the board together.
This interesting to note, the issue came up in the bill that we just heard also. It seems to be a recurring thing, and
yes.
How it was treated there was a non-voting member.
Right.
Question for Bill Crawford, Senator Adams. Senator, have you looked about a repealer on this piece of legislation? That perhaps in 2 or 3 years we can put a repealer section to see how they're doing?
You mean sunset clause?
Yeah.
No, we have not looked at that. And what we've done is we've approached this very cautiously, Senator Adams. And phase one, which is a very important phase, gives them until 1992, February 1st, 1992, to get the utilization rates and the provider payment schedules, et cetera, in place. And then after that is strictly voluntary as far as procurement of insurance. It would seem, perhaps a couple years after, maybe 1994, 95 is worth reviewing. I'm sure we will be. But to sunset it any sooner than that, I don't believe it would give the opportunity for the authority to really carry out its duties.
1994?
I said what I said, Mr. Chairman, was I don't believe that sunset is necessary. And let me repeat that. It's not until February 1st, 1992 that they're required to get the first payment schedules, et cetera, in place. It's going to take some time working with providers to do that. Then the second phase comes into being after 1992, where they could, if municipalities or all school districts in state wanted to opt in and ask them to purchase a base plan, they could go ahead and purchase that plan. I don't believe a sunset clause, although I'll go with the opinion of the committee, a sunset clause really would serve the best interest of this legislation at this point.
Senator Duncan, I wanted your reaction. There have been a couple of proposed amendments. I think you've seen one dealing with the effect of the act on existing contracts or collective bargaining agreements, and the other one on the suggested to determine the need for the authority to have access to members and or issue bonds to fund benefits or to establish reserves. Have you seen those amendments?
Well, page 7, I just now saw them. Yeah, I have no problem with that. Page 7, the First Amendment, page 7, line 11 and 12, nothing in this act affects a contract or collective bargaining agreement effectively effective date of this act. We meant for this not to interfere with the collective bargaining process, either a contract in effect or anything that might be negotiated over the next year or two. So deleting the language in effect of the effective date of this act, deleting that language does not do any harm. In fact, I think further clarifies it, and I have no difficulty, because we're not mandating procurement of insurance by anyone. I had not seen the other page 2. I'm not sure I understand that amendment.
Mr. Malik had suggested that he is going to testify here, so maybe he can further explain that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Malik suggested that it probably is okay. He's been a consultant with the task force. We've been working on the legislation. I've just been busy this morning. I've had an opportunity to talk to him about that.
I hope that amendment number 2 is okay. I'm not about to issue bonds to pay for health insurance. It would just be in the different provision of bonds over here. It's never been included, so no. The statement of independent funds. You just borrow them. Instead of saying no, which is what the whole bill is based on, trying to get some containment in the healthcare system. If you got the opt out of going to borrow the money rather than having to contain the cost, you tell me what will happen.
Mr. Chairman, I have not had time. Senator, I had not envisioned the issuance of bonds either, and I have not had time to review that amendment. In fact, I'm not sure I understand. Determine the need for the authority to have access to members. I'm not sure what that means. Have access to members. So I guess whoever proposed the amendment, who wasn't me, is going to have to explain it.
Why don't we do that, Senator Fagan?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to explore Senator Adams' suggestion, or at least questions on the sunset provision, because we have a salary commission out there. It recommends things all the time, and we never follow them. I mean, they're out there, they're getting money, they're getting per diem, and we never follow what they say. And so it might be appropriate to have some sort of provision on here so this issue is revisited at some later time to get a staff position. I mean, just to see how they're doing, and if they're not doing anything and it didn't work, then let them go away and we'll try something else.
Mr. Chairman. Jerry, I don't have any major problem with that. I guess, you know, I, as I said, the will of the committee. They are, Senator Fakes, of course, required to do a status report, as I said in my testimony by 1991 somewhere. My only problem with the sunset date is it will be crafted very carefully because they have until February 1st, 1992 to negotiate these rates, et cetera. You don't want to sunset them before they get that job done, right?
I was thinking something like 1995, July 1st, yeah. 1995. I mean, something so that would bring the issue back sure. And somebody would waive it. And we'd see what they did and evaluate if anything is being done, or if they're just giving these reports to the legislature every year, like the salary commission, and nothing happens. That's all.
Yeah,
so I would want to make sure it was way out there so that they had plenty of time to do their work.
Yeah, I don't think that would cause a major problem. It's not as far as I can foresee.
A couple questions. Okay. On the draft, Jim, I noticed from the original, which I can't find, we've gone from the state and political subdivisions to the state and specifically municipalities and school districts. I wonder why we took political subdivision out. We've gotten so specific.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in response to the question, I'm not quite sure why that wording was changed. We wanted specifically to be sure that we were all inclusive here, talking about municipalities and school districts. I guess school districts might operate separately from the municipality in the case of health insurance, so we wanted to be sure we had included them as a specific entity.
Well, I guess my concern is on the back on page 7 of the CS. Somewhere here they indicate, on page 6, line 20, include the University of Alaska, the Alaska State Housing Authority, and the Alaska Railroad Corporation. But I can also think of Alaska Permanent Fund, Alaska State Housing Authority. I mean, and those are political subdivisions of the state. I'm just wondering why it seems to me we're better off with an all-inclusive language rather than that's specific and then trying to make exceptions here in subsection 9.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we were trying to exclude anyone. I think the purpose was to be sure the school districts were included instead of just saying municipalities, to specify school districts. Subsection 9, of course, does list the Alaska State Housing Authority and the Alaska Railroad Corporation. I'm not sure the permanent fund may be part of the executive branch of government already, I think. The permanent fund corporation or located department. I'm not sure.
It just seems to me that somewhere along there we ought to reinsert political subdivisions of the state because that's what we're after, right?
It seems to be a definitional question. I think that it wasn't intended to exclude anybody. I think municipality was viewed as subdivisions. But if we're excluding anybody, we should see. I don't know who we would be.
Well, we could add the language municipality, school districts, and all political subdivisions of the state, including municipalities and school districts or whatever. I don't know either, Senator Kelly, but I think the concern may have been the school districts, since they weren't specifically mentioned, may not have been exactly covered.
Okay, and then, Mr. Chairman, on subsection 6 on page 6, we're defining group health insurance and including...
Your question.
Well, on subsection 6, we're saying this group has to come up with a plan for group health insurance, and we're including workers' compensation, Medicare, and Medicaid. Is the idea to roll all this stuff into one plan? What's workers' compensation, Medicaid, and Medicare have to do with pooling concept, I guess is what I'm asking.
Mr. President, of course, that's in phase 2, but the idea was not that it would all be one plan, but the idea was to expand the scope of the authority so that they could address workman's comp if they wanted to address that area, because it's also, as you know from your work on the workman's comp task force, an area that does require a lot of looking at. It can be a very expensive area. And also give them the opportunity to look at Medicaid, Medicare, because we spend a lot of state dollars there, et cetera. But the idea wasn't to say that you would have one plan that would be all-inclusive of all those areas.
From a practical standpoint, I mean, as we heard some testimony, I think last time, you don't watch all of these things. All you do is just shift the costs around. So we could be paying more Medicaid, conceivably, out of one pocket because we're saving in some ways through state employees' health costs.
And let me add one other thing. I think the other idea, Senator, is to be sure that when they're establishing these rate schedules and utilization rates, that they would also be establishing them for workman's comp and for Medicaid, Medicare, et cetera. So it would also apply there.
Senator Fix.
The only thing that bothers me is what happens, you've got a workman's comp commission up there, don't you? And don't you have a rate commission, a Medicaid rate commission out there already?
Had.
Yeah, that's had. Pretty much gone.
That's gone?
That's just advisory.
Okay. I just didn't want to duplicate anything, or if they're out there, bring them in so that a representative of those commissions are sitting on this commission so that we aren't, everybody's talking to each other.
Mr. Chairman. Of course, on the Medicaid, Medicare question, that's why we have members of the Department of Health and Social Services on there, for that reason. Workman's Comp, it adds one Department of Labor. I understand the concern, and we're not trying to
Let me ask you a question on the participation. There was a, for the state agencies, like the Alaska Railroad Corporation, their participation is it voluntary, just like a municipality or a school district?
It's mandatory in phase one.
Right.
In phase one, when we're talking about using the rate schedules and payment system and utilization standards, it's mandatory for all of those public entities. But for phase two, it's all voluntary. When you start about talking about procurement of insurance, it's all voluntary. And it may be that no one will want this entity to procure insurance for them. Or it may be that all school districts will say that they want to go together and have someone procure insurance for all school districts. Or maybe the Anchorage municipality will want them to do it for some reason, or several municipalities will. But it does not mandate anyone in. It allows the flexibility of opting in or not. And the same would be true then for the Railroad Corporation, et cetera. They would have the option of coming in or not coming in for the purpose of procurement.
Well, now I'm getting confused. It's mandatory in phase one. What would be mandatory on a school district, for example, under phase one?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, on page two, lines 12 through 16, really is the guts of phase one, as I understand it. The authority shall, by February 1st, 1992, establish and maintain a health care provider payment system, rate schedule, and utilization standards. The state, municipality, or district shall use the health care provider payment system, rate schedule, and utilization standards established by the authority. That's what's mandatory.
Well, that shouldn't be. I mean, I thought we understood that it wasn't going to be mandatory.
It's mandatory that they use the payment schedules. It's mandatory. What their purpose of the authority in phase one is to go out and work with providers to negotiate or to work on rate schedules, utilization standards, payment systems, which hopefully will help bring the cost of health care down. And the way that you do that is to have this authority represent enough individuals that has some impact and some influence. And therefore, if you're going out and saying, well, we're negotiating these schedules, but we don't represent anybody, they're going to go out and do what they want to do, pay what they want to pay on their own rate system. You're not going to have any influence. And phase one is the only mandatory part of this, is where all entities, they'll keep their own health insurance plan, they'll keep their own carrier, they'll negotiate their own benefits and who pays what, whether it's the state or the employee or whatever, or whether it's municipality or the employee. The only requirement is that they use the rate schedules that are negotiated by the authority.
But what if they're higher than they're currently planning and they don't want to use them because they cost more?
Well, you're talking about benefits, or you're talking about what they pay for the services? We're not negotiating benefits in phase one. We're negotiating what it costs for you to go to the hospital and get an appendectomy, for example, or to get whatever else you may get.
Conceivable that it will come in higher than some of the plans that are out there already.
Why don't you ask Mr. Malik that question? I don't believe that's the case, because we're not talking about in phase one negotiating benefit levels. We're talking about negotiating what the providers charge you for certain services. And therefore, it's not specified in most plans that I know of. It's not specified, but Mr. Malik may differ with me on this, but it's not specified what they're going to pay for a certain service. It's what the folks pay.
What would really help me, I guess, if I knew how much an appendectomy was how much you got versus the various plans across the state?
Yeah, I guess I don't know the answer. I'm not sure anybody can give you an answer for every plan across the state, but
or a sampling.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
that's fine.
I haven't had an appendectomy yet, and if I have one, I'm only going to go one place and have one, so I'm not going to be able to compare.
What have you had? Have you had any dental work?
I've had dental work, yes.
Okay, have you had a crown?
I've had a crown.
Okay, why don't we compare crowns?
All right, fine. How much did yours cost?
I'm in the middle of mine now, and I'm not going to tell you because it's terrible, and I'm going to have to pay most of it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, seriously, the answer to that question that Senator Kelly had, I believe, and I would appreciate maybe perhaps someone who's more of an expert in this area than I am, but what we're looking at is mandating them in to use the payment systems and the rate schedule utilization standards, not to change their plans or say what level of benefits they're going to have or whether they pay 80-20 or 90-10 or any of that type of stuff, but just to try to, and Senator Kelly, we know from our health care cost attainment task force that one of the parts of this equation is not just what the benefit level is or what the, whether it's 80-10 or 80-20, 90-10 or whatever, there's also what it costs you when you go to a hospital or to a dentist or to a doctor or to a chiropractor or to a acupuncturist.
Wait a minute.
No, they're not in here.
Other questions?
I
have
a lot of them.
Senator Duncan, thank you very much.
May I join
you? No, please.
More or less than that.
Let's see. Let's get back to our testimony list here. Mr. Mallett, are you here? Maybe you can comment on some of the questions in addition to your other remarks. We are on teleconference, so if you can press that button forward.
Sure. Jeff Mallett with Gallagher and Company, also working with Healthcare Cost Containment Task Force. The revised bill that you see in front of you, as compared to what we spoke about in the last committee, is more along the lines, I think, of what type of authority or vehicle that you'd want to establish in order to start pulling everybody together and gaining some control on the escalating healthcare costs. To be very honest with you, it may be very difficult or maybe difficult to reduce what you're currently paying, but most advantageous would be to start slowing down this medical inflation. This is why the federal government has changed the whole Medicare system, how they're going to pay doctors. It really is a very important issue when you're starting to spend near $370 million. Add 20% to that if it's uncontrolled. That's what it'll be in 1991 and so forth and so on. We know that from history because in 85 it was only $75 million. So without a substantial increase in benefits or enrolled, it's jumped substantial. A couple of comments. The idea of setting Alaska utilization and rate schedules is simply that, in order to be able to work with the provider community and bring them into the fold in order to start finding resources at the most cost-effective manner. There are going to be some areas where you are going to have to pay the going rate, whatever it is. You're going to have some rural areas that you're underservicing or don't even have service in. But there are ways for you through the system to encourage health care to be delivered more so in Alaska rather than going to California or wherever, Washington. That is some of your concern and problem where the information, or I should say the services, are being done out of state. So with you need a vehicle to pull all the groups together, and you have to do it mandatorily because if you don't have large groups participating, you're losing something. And you don't have the weight or the data to recognize your trends early and quickly and be able to react to them and act on them. So the comments being in the first phase where you do pull everybody together, that is very, very much an advantage to state. The second phase where you start procuring insurance long-term, that might very well be one way to do it. That might be very popular or might be an election. But really, your long-term savings are going to be in the first phase. There's just no question about it. As you generate those savings, you may elect to become members of the pool. Very simply to procure the insurance. But we know that each group individually, you have some small municipalities that have a few employees. They have no clout in any area. And they might be overshadowed by a paying system that's a much larger. The state might be in that same area. They have a lot more employees and a completely different payment system. And but your comment, Chair, is very correct, is that you could find some savings in the state employees' health plan, but you're shifting it over to the Medicare plan or over into the work comp system. It's a vicious cycle. We call it death spiral almost, because what you've done is squeeze it over here and it goes somewhere else and it costs you more money. But you have to start getting control on what your utilization and payment patterns would be. There's some inaccuracies you need to level. And this is the idea. Now, how it's all done. Part of the authority's job would obviously to find the most economical and efficient way to do that. Whether they modify a federal system or create their own or decide that there's multiple ways of doing it, we don't know that. Until you have a vehicle to pull everybody together and get their comments and ideas, it makes the most sense. Regarding some comments about issue bonds to fund benefits, really, that's one way that comes out of a task force report. Really, that's one way, if you had a pool running, in order to be able to either assess groups or issue bonds for a technically bad year, but you don't have legislation in this to create somebody to issue bonds in order to make a past deficit. Normally what you do is, if you're setting your rates properly, you're setting for your expected losses plus some reserve.
going further than that, generally where you raise bonds or assess members are traditionally very bad years, or where you short funded it, or you made some changes that you just didn't expect. You added, you doubled the size of the group and didn't anticipate what that would do to your rates or your reserves, those kind of things. But that's where the comments are. And I think those were the questions that were.
You asked acupuncturists, you'll start adding a bunch of new benefits.
That's another comment if I could make, is we currently don't have a clear understanding, I don't think, is when anybody mandates a coverage, whether it's at the federal level or the state level, what that impact is on all of the system. There were some recent Medicare changes that just some what look to be minor changes in the law are going to cost the state somewhere around $7 million in fiscal 91. So minor changes that seem to be appearing somewhere else have a significant impact, and you have to be able to gauge for that and react to it. And right now it's being handled in multiple different ways and sort of under a layer of fog almost, because each one does something independently.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one other comment on the amendment two that we've been talking about, the bonds. That really caught me by surprise. Of course, nowhere in this legislation does it give the authority, do we give authority to the authority that we're creating to issue bonds. That was more of an intent statement, I think, than anything else. It's something they might come back and look at, but nowhere are we giving that authority in this legislation for issuance of bonds.
Senator Kelly, did you have a follow-up question? Mm-hmm. Other questions, Ms. Powell? Thank you. In your report, did we or did the CS, proposed CS, address the rest of your comments on or the original 254? In my reading, it looked like there had been an attempt to address most, if not all, of those comments, except the last one that you raised on issuing the bonds.
I think the CS in its current form, I bet that you might have some changes as you move through committees, but is much closer to what I think you'd want long term. We had the leisure of having another state that has an authority been created for 20 some years, has gone through a lot of changes, have a cursory look at this CS, and they their comment to myself last Friday was, I wish we would have done it that way. Mm-hmm. Fees it in, get to the provider payment schedules, really work that side of it, and they now are, if you will, retrenching a little bit and going to that very actively. It gives them a little more, gives more control and a more planned approach. So, but yes, it does address what I think are the, what were some of the inherent problems with the first draft.
Thank you very much, sir. See, Mr. Cummings, were you wanting to issue testimony or just be available for comment?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to testify.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bruce Cummings. I'm the Director of the Division of Labor Relations, Department of Administration. Excuse me. Bruce Cummings, Director of Labor Relations, Department of Administration. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee recall the last time I appeared on this subject, I had grave reservations about the compatibility of a mandatory risk pool, in effect, and insurance as a mandatory subject of collective bargaining. Having read the committee substitute, I no longer have that concern. This is a voluntary elective kind of participation, and I don't see where there would be any conflict between the two statutory requirements at that point.
Do you see any conflict along the lines of what that Senator Fakes raised earlier about having other boards or commissions that may be in nothing in the Department of Administration, though, is in conflict with this?
Not really within the Department of Administration. It should be understood that now within the Division of Retirement and Benefits, we do offer health insurance to political subdivisions. And to some extent, that may appear to be redundant or duplicative. They have that option now of purchasing through DOA, but it's not a conflict per se. And perhaps one would go away if this were a viable option.
Senator Kelly.
Bruce, can you think of a political subdivision that's not a municipality or a school district? Or the University of Alaska or Asha?
Through the chair. No, Senator, but I really am not familiar with the nuances of the legal definition of political subdivision. I heard your comments earlier, and I frankly don't know.
Other questions, Mr. Cummings? Thank you very much. I think you ought to be able to find the answer to that question, you know.
I just have maybe Mr. Burgess can discuss.
Michelle Castaneda, is she here? Starting to testify? Mr. Stallnaker? I don't see him either. On teleconference, Brian Rogers, did you wish to offer testimony?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Brian Rogers, Vice President for Finance at the University of Alaska. Just like to say that we support the changes in the committee substitute that no longer make the participation mandatory. We feel that the phase one, as described by Senator Duncan, has the greatest potential for cost savings to the university and to other participants in the program. The one concern that that I'd like to highlight, I think, is that might require a minor amendment if the committee wished to pursue it, and that is that the definition of group health insurance, page 6, line 10, includes life, accidental deaths, and dismemberment, and workers' comp, and it may be for some participants that they would like to elect certain of the coverages and not others. At the university right now, we self-insure for workers' comp and health, but we purchase insurance for life and AD&D, and it may be that we'd be able to participate as drafted right now in one or two of the programs, but not all four. We would like the option to be able to buy in with one or two, but not all four.
Senator Dunn.
Thank you. Brian, I appreciate your testimony. This question, of course, came up earlier, and I'm just wondering, maybe the wording is just bad on that definition. Maybe what we should say is group health insurance means coverage that may include life insurance, accidental death, that we're not mandating that all that be in one be included, but that it would be all-inclusive, it would be possible. I'm not sure if that answers the question or not. You're shaking your head. No.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, I think that definition would certainly, from our standpoint, take care of the issue, and I think we're in agreement with Senator Duncan on what the intent of the bill is.
Questions to Mr. Rogers? Thank you. Did someone, was there other people representing the university desiring to testify?
No, just listening. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have a lot of duplicate notes here for people. Is there anybody in Anchorage desiring to testify?
Yes, there is.
Please identify yourself.
My name is Charles McKee.
Please proceed, Mr. McKee.
I've been following the insurance industry quite closely for some time. As you all know, that the reinsurer's conduct is really at the crux of the financial seriousness of our economy, state and citizens that not employed by governmental agencies within the state. And following the comments earlier, and the group needs to represent as many people as possible was a statement that I heard. And I think that's kind of redundant of what the current administration and previous administration should have been doing. Rather than passing over to another entity to represent not only a segment of the population in this state, but the total group. I still find that the reduction in cost and individual employees that work for governmental agencies in the state, primarily Alaska, is $385, am I correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, then the reduction would come from maybe pursuing a case in U.S. District Court in that matter against the reinsurers, because where the negligence has occurred, as well as a training school that I've been unfortunately made privy to while I was outside trying to gain medical as well as legal services without any money in my pocket, just, you know, on a contingency fee basis. But I didn't, you know, wasn't able to do that, but I did come across this Stephen Wallace Insurance Training School and the free-floating insurance brokers that caused the demise of Patmar, for instance, by following practices that were unethical at best, and therefore causing a big economic downfall for a lot of people, including the state. So I think that, you know, I'm trying to help you people out, and please take that into consideration, that maybe the an individual's case, such as mine, could be represented and indeed reduce the cost. Maybe go after the general fund, that not the general fund, but the guarantee fund. If you know how much money, I'd like to know how much money there is in the guarantee fund, and see what where it's at. Actually, maybe the reinsurers have it over in some foreign country. For all we know, it might be there, and we couldn't even reach it. So. It's a need to reduce expenses, so that we have to reduce this equity skimming, and that's the big crutch, you know. That's where we can really save some bucks and benefit people at the same time. And as far as this legislation, it's falling short from that, so I have to give it a big no, and you people talk to the administration and the Attorney General's office, and maybe even API, because there's an addiction and extortion of other people's equity, and that's pretty apparent. And have a nice day.
Thank you, Ms. McKee. Is there anybody in Juneau who would like to testify on 254 that I don't have on my list here? Senator Keller?
One of the things we discovered in the last year is that there isn't a whole lot of equity skimming in the health insurance field. And if there is, we can't find it. When you have X number, you know, we pay X number in premium, they pay X number in claim, and assuming that the figures are correct, there's simply not that much skimming material available.
Mr. Burgess, did you want to testify? Perhaps you could clarify political subdivision for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Scott Burgess with the Alaska Municipal League. First of all, I appreciate the sponsors working with the league. We did have some concerns with the legislation as originally introduced and the mandatory participation, and quite frankly, and I haven't been able to follow this as closely, just because it seemed to be that was the issue that my members are most concerned about. But being in the insurance area as well, on behalf of the league, certainly recognize the importance of this issue, both for state employees and municipal employees as well. I'm still not ready to testify on the what's left of the mandatory participation, just what that means to a municipality. I'm just trying to understand it myself and talking to the staff. But let me try and address some of the concerns. One, let me try and answer the question. I'm not sure and that I can respond to the question as far as political subdivision. I think that the senator's concern is not so much municipalities and school districts, but other instrumentalities of the state seems to be the concern. And maybe that's some language. I think we're talking about things that the state has created. It's under the state umbrella. But I think political subdivisions gets to, or saying municipalities and school districts, I can't think of anything else out there. But there may be instrumentalities of the state that may want to be included somehow. So I'm not sure it's really a function at the local level, but more what the state has created to carry out functions for the people in the state. I think we may have come to some agreement on the workers' comp. Just personally, the municipal league does provide workers' comp insurance on a pool basis to municipalities. And I don't think that the definition of health insurance normally would include workers' comp. In fact, what allows us to pool specifically prohibits us from being in the health insurance area, but we do have workers' comp. I think the reason it came up is that obviously part of workers' comp, a major portion of that is medical payments that you have to make in order to compensate that person to get them back to work and whatever. And to that degree, the medical system is going to pick it up. But I don't think it has anything to do with workers' comp rates in terms of what you get for loss of an arm in the course of your employment or something like that. So I think that that probably could be clarified, perhaps by just taking it out altogether and not do damage, but I'll leave that to the committee. But I think that we would like to see that out of there. And I do have a little concern in terms of the participation as far as waiver, and we'd be glad to work with the sponsor in further committee, but I'm not really sure what the minimum benefit financial standard would be. My understanding in previous conversations is that there'd be a minimum package although this isn't really specified in the legislation, there may be a minimum package and that there may be alternatives over and above that, and what you're trying to do is compare to the minimum package as opposed to whatever might be all the options. And I think that that's what is being discussed there, but I didn't really see the definition of minimum benefit and financial standard. And then just in difficulty of making those matches when you're trying to deal with what you might be able to purchase commercially and trying to compare that with a self-insurance program. We have that problem all the time in trying to attract members to our pool. You can't always compare to on any given year because the market fluctuates. And the purpose of a pool is over time to make those savings, whereas any given year, depending on how soft the market is, you may be able to get very low rates, but when it tightens up, they may not even be available then. So it may be difficult to prove that, and I presume it's on an annual basis. At least in our program, we have a 3-year minimum participation. Perhaps other than state, in terms of bringing the state in, at least for the school districts and the municipalities, is to, again, allow them to get in or get out, but maybe it's for a 3-year period, and then they can reevaluate that. In other words, you keep them in for a period of time to bring some stability to the pool, but you don't lock someone in. Given some of the difficulties some of the smaller municipalities are having right now, they may be able to participate this year. They may not be able to offer this benefit in years down the road, some of the smaller communities. I guess the question is just, you know, do you pay them just what benefits you can provide? So that's something that we still have a question about. I'm not sure it's something that we're necessarily opposed to.
Specifically, what is it that you're talking about?
I'm sorry. I wasn't sure I was going to testify because I just had seen the CS, which for the most part seemed to deal with most of my concerns. But this is on page 5. Section 2177090 under B, subsection B, it basically says, starting in A, the last sentence, if the state, municipality, school district elects to participate, shall continue to participate unless a waiver is granted by the board. And the question is just how do you go about that? My understanding is you have to say, unless you can say that you can purchase insurance equal to some minimum financial and benefit standard, that you will participate. If you say, well, I can get it $5,000 cheaper, then you're out of the program, presumably for a year. It says during the term of the contract. I don't know if the contract can be more than a year or 3 years or whatever. And I'm just saying that's going to be a difficult test always to do, especially for some of the communities. And I'm not sure it's going to be a question whether they can afford it more cheaply or not, or whether they can even afford it at all in some cases, even though that's a sorry state that they can't afford to protect their workers. And you know, health benefits become a sort of minimum standard, but I'm not sure in some cases it'll always be able to, especially with the cost of health care. So that's a concern just in terms of how that waiver process works.
Questions, Ms. Burgess?
I think that it may be that municipality will want to participate in this if it, you know, can get off the ground. The mandatory aspect of it, I'm not really sure how that affects their programs, but I think the waiver issue, that they have the ability to take a look at it, if it makes sense, that they'll be in it. But the only other question I have is, in definition, can an individual agency of the state opt in or out? Or, I mean, is the state always in or always out?
Mr. Chair.
Maybe I can try to answer a couple of those questions. First of all, on the individual agency, first on the mandatory part, phase one, which is mandatory, and they have to have the rate schedules done by February 1st, 1992, should not impact a municipality's present plan, benefit level of municipality might be paying, the plan you have, your carrier is, etc. Has nothing to do with that at all. It's just to help on a statewide basis determine what the payment rates, schedules, etc. are, which you would then benefit from. So it would not impact municipalities, and that's negatively. That's why it was put that way. Secondly, as far as a state agency, no, not an agency by itself could opt in or opt out, but a collective bargaining unit might decide to. For example, ASEA may decide they want to opt in to the pool for purposes of procurement. APA might not want to. But it would go along that lines, not by agencies, because health care is negotiated at the table for various collective bargaining units. On your other question about the waiver, I'm not sure there's a real problem there. You know, municipalities have the option of coming in or not. We're not mandating you in the second phase. It's a voluntary opt-in. And then if you should decide, and I thought it was laid out pretty clearly here, I'm not the expert in this area, but the minimum benefit and financial standards, let's see. In determining whether a waiver should be granted, the board shall establish minimum benefit financial standards for the desired group health insurance coverage. And once that's established, it seems to me that you can match up with that. And if municipality X says that they can do better than what is the minimum standards there, they apply for a waiver to opt out, and it can be given by the authority. I'm not sure it's quite as complicated as you're making it sound. But perhaps that's because you really haven't had time to look at the legislation, but I think it's laid out as clearly as we could lay it out. And those standards, those minimum benefit financial standards, should be well defined for the college to look at, or the state, or the university, or whatever.
Senator, thanks.
But Mr. Chairman, I can see what Mr. Burgess is talking about here. Because let's say that they look at the minimum standards and everything's going wonderfully, and then they have a financial crisis in that municipality. And they've signed a 3-year contract, and this is year 2, and they can't make it. They want to opt out. And because of financial exigency, or whatever that word is, I think that needs to be in here, that if a municipality really has a financial problem and their assembly is voted to opt out, that they ought to be able to opt out. Now, the problem with that is, of course, the rates and the amount of coverage that's been purchased and all by this pool will be affected if people just willy-nilly drop out. So I understand both sides of it, but I think maybe if there's a financial exigency clause in here, that would help the municipalities.
Senator Kelly.
He said, I don't really anticipate they'd give up health insurance. What they do is cut employees or fire folks or cut something, but they wouldn't cut health insurance premiums because they're probably statutorily or collective bargainingly committed to doing that particular aspect. They'd get rid of employees before they'd get rid of the health program, I would think.
Well, then that brings up a real good point, Mr. Chairman, if I may. What if a municipality has to reduce its employees by 25%? How does that then affect their contract with the amount of money they're paying into the pool for the health insurance? See, that there may have to be some sort of, and boy, I'm over my head on this subject, so, and I hope I'm not making a fool of myself here, but it seems to me there would have to be some provision that if they cut their employees because of financial situation, X percent, that their pool amount or their contribution could be reduced by that amount, too.
Well, I'm assuming that when you enter the phase two process, you'd be on a per employee basis for whatever the benefits were.
I think that's the answer, and I was going to ask perhaps Mr. Maddock if you had another explanation for that.
Well, as people quit these various entities, they're disenrolled. And if you have to lay off employees, they simply disenroll.
I think that's the answer.
Right, exactly. Do you have any other comments, Mr. Perkins?
No.
Questions, Mr. Perkins? Thank you very much. Is there anybody else desiring to testify on this bill? Or have any questions that need answers? If not, I've got a list here, and maybe Senator Duncan can help me here, too. I've got a list of about 6 things that have come up. On the amendment sheet, it sounded like to me that the amendment number 1 dealing with the, to clarify, no effect on contractor collective bargaining, that sounded like it met with general approval. The second amendment seemed to be problematic and perhaps not desirable.
Actually, on the second amendment, I think the term and need for the authority to have access to members might be acceptable. I think that it's hard to say how it would work out, but the authority would have to be able to know who's all enrolled in the plan and not just the subdivision or the school district.
Of course, my reading, I mean, this is a purpose, and it's determine the need, not, you know, that's a first step of it, presumably a second step, two or three step process.
I'm assuming they would do that before we get into phase 2, that they would determine the need, whether they need to know that before they go into phase 2. Is that the intent behind it?
This is Jeff Malik again, Chair. If I could clarify, first of all, the language regarding access to members is really assess members, meaning that would be a way to recover a deficit in a bad year. But back to the board authority for a second. Once you start moving into phase 2, they'd have to establish basically like an insurance company with participation standards, enrollment standards, eligibility, all those standards that you would have to protect yourself from yourself almost. And so the things about Senator Fay's comment about if 25% of the group drops out and leaves for whatever reason, yes, that has a negative impact on the overall group, and we want to be able to counteract that somehow. And that's where that assessment language would come in. If certain things happen, you'd have the ability to recover a deficit or whatever.
So we don't need Amendment 2 for the purposes of this bill. If you were to go to mandatory, you might need something like
that. You'd want to make sure that you had a lot of financial controls and leverage on your plan.
Another issue that was raised, and this is the old one about whether legislative representation or, for that matter, judicial representation should occur on a essentially an executive authority board, is raised on page 2, and we have 2 members representing the legislative branch, 2 members of the judicial branch. Seems like you can go 2 ways there. One, you can reduce your board by 4 members down to 14 or 13 from 17, assuming that there aren't, in the big scheme of things, that many legislative or judicial employees, and their policies have been identical, at least that I know of, to the executive. Or if there was some great need for that, we could make those four people non-voting members. Senator Duncan, I don't know to what extent that representation is necessary or crucial to the big board.
It's not crucial as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Chairman. I think that the judicial branch has long expressed interest, right, being involved in various things, and that's probably where that came from. Of course, the executive branch has that same, interest. However, I don't believe it's critical of the operation of this authority. And I think it's probably wise, because the constitutional question has been raised, it's probably wise to not put those four on on the board.
Other comments by the committee on that issue?
Well, I kind of like a liaison there, frankly. Judicial branch has closely followed the cost care containment stuff. And, I've seen Warren Endicott get upset with some things being proposed by the administration, as has judicial branch. I don't think it hurts, maybe one each, but I don't think it hurts to put them on there. And if we have, and after all, they will be appointed by the governor. It's not saying because you're a, let's say, representative or senator, I don't think it hurts them on there at all.
Well, it's one of these recent constitutional issues. If we do keep them on there, I think that they have to be non-voting. So that's the only clarification. We could have one each and make them non-voting.
Right. I would hate, since we've had the opinion, and I think on two or three bills, if there is a constitutional problem, I would really hesitate to put them on and cause some problems with the legislation.
One each non-voting.
Another issue was, I'm sorry.
Pardon me?
Senator Adams.
Are we reducing the council?
One each, non-voting.
Oh, can 15. We? Okay, can we reduce it in half from 17 down to?
Nine and a half.
To nine?
Well, we're already down to 15.
Well, it'll be cut down in this fiscal month that we presently have, over $500,000 or so.
That's not the part of the fiscal note that's expensive. The 17 people are only $50,000.
Yeah. It's a contracting service.
Yeah, and the personal service is three people for these 12 folks.
Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note is a topic that needs to be discussed. And we just saw the fiscal note earlier today, and I think that it does need to be looked at, and sure it will be looked at. And the contractual area is, the contractual area is a big portion of it, and that's a book, since we're on a topic, that's just a shot in the dark, really. It's whether it costs $250,000 to hire a consultant to do this, or whether it costs $100,000 or $125,000 or whatever. But you need somebody, when you're dealing with providers, you need somebody who understands the medical game and the insurance game, right? And that's, it may be spending a dime to save $100,000, may not be. Actually, it may be spending a dime to save a lot more than that when you have $370 million in health care costs in the state. If you reduce it by 5%, you're talking $15, $20 million. It may not be a bad investment.
I guess I'm just wondering why you need an administrative assistant. I can see needing a secretary to answer the phone when this other person is traveling over the state. But why do you need an administrative assistant? To answer the phone when the secretary is not there? You're at least one position too high.
That's right.
I can do this whole thing out of my office for
you. Me too.
I'm certain 50,000 people in my district. Well, Senator Ewing and Senator Duncan can discuss this in Finance Committee. The other topic here was on sunsetting. I know there was some interest expressed in sunsetting or picking a date for sunsetting. Is that something that the committee wants to pursue?
July 1st, 95.
Standard's 4 years, but they take an extra year to get going, so there's 5 minutes.
Yeah, because they don't have enough people there.
Another issue was the discussion that was raised by Brian Rogers on page 6, line 10. Line 10 inserting
May I clarify that? I'm not sure what the answer is here, but the real reason, the definition of group health insurance here, as I viewed it, was for the purpose of rate setting, of payment schedules. We look at all those areas for payment schedules, because Medicaid, Medicare, et cetera, are impacted by the payment schedules. We wouldn't be out buying a group health insurance plan that's going to cover Medicaid, Medicare, and all these various areas, right? So it's a definition problem more than anything else. This definition really applied to the rate setting portion of it. Maybe workers' comp doesn't need to be there, because that's really, how much you pay a guy for an army loss or whatever. But on the other hand, we want to have a look at the costs being charged by the providers for those folks, too, under those policies. So
I guess I'm not giving you a clear answer, but this was really my view for the rate setting purposes, not saying that when they finally procured insurance after February 1st, 1992, they'd get a policy that covered life insurance, accidental death, dismemberment, workers' comp, medical care, Medicaid, Medicare, dental vision, et cetera. We know that's not what we intended.
I think if we include the word may in there, that then we give them the scope to be able to look at that, but it doesn't mandate that they offer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might do it.
Yeah, the suggestion was to, in that line, group health insurance means coverage that may include life insurance, et cetera, and leave everything in there, as opposed to taking something out like workers' comp.
Because what we're really looking at is not the cost of workers' comp to the employer, but the costs, the medical costs down the road. I guess. What else?
One last one was just really, I view this as just strictly a definitional clarification on political subdivision. And here I think Scott made a good point that it may not be that we've eliminated anybody relative to such as different kinds of municipalities or school districts, but rather were there state subdivisions, state agency type subdivisions that somehow may have been dropped by not using the word subdivision and spelling out some of the state agencies. And Senator Duncan, I kind of take it from your comments that your only concern is that, you know, that we include people, that we not inadvertently drop out people that should be included.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm wondering on subsection or on definition for number 9, state means executive, legislative, judicial branch of state government or an organizational unit of a branch and includes the University of Alaska or a public corporation established by the state. How would that be?
I think we should ask Mr. Bob of the Attorney General's office, because if we have a separation of powers question here on the legislative and the judicial branch from page 1 on membership, then we might have that transfer over here to 9 under this definition. So I just think the administration, real quick, Jim Baldwin can answer what a political subdivision is. And I agree with you. I think it's a definition problem. You want to include everybody.
Yeah.
So I think we can just understand that the new CS will include everybody based on what somebody in the AG's office said.
That would be my intention, that we would... go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dale Staley, staff of Senator Duncan. I don't think there'd be a conflict by including and other corporations established by the state here, as there was a conflict including legislators and executive branch members on the board, because the board is the governing body of this organization, and the definition of state is identifying those agencies who may participate.
I also feel a little awkward about getting too all-inclusive. I mean, what if all of a sudden by adding political subdivisions we're talking about all the different, you know, nonprofit hatcheries around? I think Senator Duncan and myself view this as a possible means of sometime in the future enacting some type of all-inclusive health benefit plan for all Alaskans. But I think it's a little premature to do that until it gets off the ground. And I'd hate to get so broad right now that as it sits, we have pretty good data on all of these various bases we're talking about. If we expand it beyond that at this time, we have no database to work with that's going to be meaningful. So I think on reflection, I feel kind of comfy with it here right now. Unless somebody can tell me these people are definitely being left out by using this definition, I think this pretty much includes what I had in mind.
Senator, thanks.
Is there any problem just asking? No. Okay, that's all I'm suggesting, because I think Baldwin, who works with this administrative stuff all the time, can just give us an answer really quick as to what it includes, what it doesn't include, and then we can make a decision.
What I would propose is that we drop a new CS and try...
I have one more problem.
Okay.
Senator, let's go down further.
Senator Adams.
I've asked that a new Section 9 be included. They act... sunsets July 1st, 1985, section 21770.
And also,
okay.
I presume here that under on page 30, there's something in here about number 30, section 3, page 6, line 23. I presume, is that the exempt personnel service? Is that what that is, Dale?
What line?
I'm sorry. Line 23 and page 6. 24, actually.
I'm sorry, I have to look at the statute again. I didn't know.
I'll bet that's making conflict of interest. Personnel into exempt, and I'll bet 50 is conflict of interest. One of the reasons I know that, because I'm looking at another exemption, and I think that was line 30, when that would have been number 30. So
what is it, 3925,
110? 110, 200. It's a pretty big coincidence, something else. Not exactly 30. And
3950-200 is 3950-200 are what is it? 3950-200. Oh, B. Just what is listed in the state commission for? Just adds this list of state commission boards.
One concern I have is that the current administration that's going to be manning many of these slots and appointing the body is only going to be around for 8 more months, and yet the majority of these folks are going to be around for 4 and 5 years, and I would think that the board should serve at the pleasure of the government.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Well, I'm not sure that that's not true.
That's right. For our fishing game.
Yeah, except...
How is it true? I mean,
they all serve at the pleasure of the governor. It's in the statutes that way. All boards and commissions except for the judicial. Quasi-judicial they have at COD.
Does that include authorities?
Yeah. What you do is the quasi-judicial, the governor has to have COD for terminating them. Otherwise, they all serve, if it's not a quasi-judicial, they all serve at the pleasure of the governor.
Can somebody confirm that?
You want me to say yes, sir?
No, we can. Can we get a yes? I just, you know, don't think it.
I'll take the judiciary.
Whoever the next governor might be, it's probably not fair. But, and frankly, on a board like this, they'd probably look at it and say, yeah, that's fine, everybody's safe, right? But they might have their own preferences also, and that's who's going to be running the show for 4 years.
I just, yeah. We can check on that. I'd assume it would be run like a lot of things, that it's not that, I mean, where you, if you're picking people to represent some of these other groups, you know, you're soliciting the names from those groups, from the employee groups, or from the healthcare provider groups. Other questions? Other problems?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Our side is this. You had sent a memo earlier to us dated today regarding the ombudsman's bill regarding Senate Bill number 416 and Senate Bill 452. Did you want our comments written or just
Oral comments are fine. I just wanted to get some indication if there was another change made in the House to accommodate a particular problem with ongoing trooper investigations. Otherwise, the bill is essentially the same bill that we passed out of here. And I don't know, Senator Kelly, you had expressed some reservations about the bill, and I don't know if this addressed your concern.
I guess I'm a little concerned when they were starting to talk about subpoenas and such.
That was for the judiciary, I believe, where they felt more, I guess, comfortable with the word, with using the subpoena system, which is actually more rigorous. I mean, that would protect the judiciary or some of the judicial files from just having the ombudsman walk in on them. Well, maybe I want it, Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chair, may I answer Senator Kelly's question? I think I found the answer.
Okay.
3905060, appointment qualification in terms of office of members of department boards, councils, or commissions. A vacancy occurring during a term of office is filled in the same manner as the original appointment is made for the balance of the unexpired term. Each member holds office at the pleasure of the governor, notwithstanding the member's term.
Except for fishing game and judicial.
Yes.
And maybe to some authority that the board reaches.
But does this tie into that?
Yes.
This authority is part of that statute?
Yes, yes. In fact, that's the statute that references here, 3950-200. Yeah. This is earlier section of 39.
Okay. Well, on this ombudsman bill, I'll just get back to people here and there, too. I mean, I think it's just a question of waiving it on if people are comfortable. If not, we'll schedule it back here. So, Senator Kelly, you want me to... I can get back to you. On the other bill before us, what I would propose is that we draft a CS addressing all of these things along the things that I think that we've agreed on, and in addition, get a definitive statement from council on what subdivisions mean or what state agencies may or may not be included, and we'll bring it back on Wednesday then, hopefully for final approval. And we'll try to get it out to people prior to that time. Were there other questions besides the political subdivision that people were interested in getting clarification on?
Chairman, there is one other change, if I might. We're going to do another committee session, I think we are. On page 4, line 14, just a minor change. We've been told that the word 2, any lower cost 2 eligible employees should be a lower cost per eligible employees, which per employee instead of 2 employees.
Okay, if there's nothing else coming forth, committee, we are adjourned.
Thank you.